Welcome to the 13 Skulls. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this episode, we're going to take a look at superhumans whose DNA is worth billions, UFO exposure from the FBI, the skull of the director of Nosferatu was stolen from the grave, 12 mysterious things that have been found on Earth that cannot be explained, the Smithsonian admits to the destruction of thousands of giant human skeletons in the early 1900s, and the strangest website that I have found yet. That and a lot more in this 70th episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome back, everybody. I really appreciate you having patience for the next show to come out. The reason that it took so long to get a new show out was basically just for the simple fact that I got a new microphone. Great microphone. It's the Rode, R-O-D-E, NT1A. The noise floor on it is at like 5 decibels, which is like basically nothing. And the sound quality, which I'm not sure if you can tell, is substantially better than it used to be. With the other microphone that I had. Now, don't get me wrong. The other microphone I had was a fantastic starter microphone. It really was. It was a Samson Z01U. It was just a USB mic. I needed to get something a little bit different. I needed to get an XLR microphone. This is a cardioid condenser microphone. Basically, it only picks up from one side. It doesn't have that figure eight polar pattern to it to where it will pick up from all directions. It only picks up from one side, and that's the direction that's facing me. It so far is a fantastic microphone. I hope you guys can tell a difference. I hope you can tell a quality difference in it. But it picks up everything, all the little clicks, all the little pops from your voice. So hopefully it doesn't get too annoying. I know it kind of bothers me a little bit just for the fact that it's kind of aggravating to hear that. I'm an audio snob when it comes to my own podcast. So you know, things are a little bit different whenever it comes to that. But so far, I absolutely love it. I love how you can monitor yourself while you talk. You can hear yourself. It makes it so much better because I've always worn headphones whenever I recorded just for the silence in my own head, you know, not getting distracted by things that are outside of the where I'm recording at. I could get into a little bit more and being able to hear myself. It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. But it took a while to get it all set up and get the levels right and get everything situated in a way that worked for me, because I've never worked with a microphone that required a sound card, that required power to it. You know, I'm just used to plugging it straight into the USB and going from there. But I'm hoping that you guys can tell a difference in the way that the show sounds. For me, I'm actually, you know, it's kind of weird. I don't know whether it's vain of me or what, but I've always enjoyed hearing my own voice. And now that I can actually monitor myself while I'm recording and hear myself in live time, I like my voice even more. And I'm recording this kind of late. It's 10:47 on Saturday. I think it just sounds so much better. It really does. I don't know if it's because of the time of day that I'm recording or what it is, but I think it sounds, the sound quality of the microphone is just fantastic. So hopefully you guys can tell a difference and it actually sounds better. So anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next thing that I wanted to talk about. I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the last show. I can't remember now. I'm going to start, now that I have a good microphone to work with, I'm going to start doing voiceover work. I'm going to, you know, start getting out there and putting my voice to things if people will hire me. If you yourself need some voiceover work done, let me know. If anyone you know needs work done, please let me know. Get us in contact with each other. I would love to do it. Like I said, I'm a reasonable rate and I enjoy doing it. So just let me know if you know anybody that needs that kind of stuff done. I'm going to be putting out new stuff, at least from what I'm tentatively saying that I'm going to put out stuff on Thursdays. Now that I got a new microphone out, I'm going to be doing that, the voiceover work. I'm going to be doing the show. So I'm hoping that I have time for that. If not, not. I'm not sure yet. I'm kind of thinking, as you know, thinking things through as I'm going through the days and the weeks as they pass by and what I can do and what I can't do. But if you do need work done as far as voiceover goes, let me know. I would love to be able to do that and work with you. I'm easy to work with. So just let me know. Just email me at the13skulls@gmail.com. And we'll get going from there. I have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/the13skulls. You can donate as little as a dollar a month. It really would help out a lot. You know, if you want to, it'd be great. If not, you don't have to. Don't feel like you need to. Also, you can go through Podbean. There is a crowdfunding thing there, which is basically the same as Patreon is. And there's ads on the webpage too. I quit smoking not too long ago, and I know that a lot of people out there still smoke. They smoke analog cigarettes. I have moved to the electronic cigarette, and I get all my stuff through Johnson Creek Enterprises. They have great smoke juice. For anybody out there who doesn't know what it's called smoke juice, the liquid that you actually use. One thing I like about them is they are FDA approved. They only have like maybe 5 to 7 ingredients in their liquid that you use, and it's all basically natural stuff like citric acid. So, you know, stuff that you would get if you ate an orange, you know, that kind of thing. It's a lot better than cigarettes. But there's an ad on the webpage. You can go there if you want to. You can, you know, I guess, I don't know if you can get a discount or what, but it will help support the show too if you do that. Let's go ahead and get on with the show. We got a lot of stuff to cover, a lot of really interesting things. The first thing that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of businessinsider.com. What would a dream look like if it was coming from a machine? Well, Google recently has started to release pictures of hypnotic landscapes of buildings, fountains, and bridges that merge into one another. The pictures, which veer from beautiful to terrifying, were created by the company's image recognition neural network, which has been, quote-unquote, taught to identify features such as buildings, animals, and objects in photographs. They were created by feeding pictures into the network, asking it to recognize a feature of it and modify the picture to emphasize the feature it recognizes. That modified picture is then led back into the network, which is again tasked to recognize features and emphasize them, and so on. Eventually, the feedback loop modifies the picture beyond all recognition. At a low level, the neural network might be tasked merely to detect the edges of an image. In that case, the picture becomes painterly, an effect that will be instantly familiar to anyone who, you know, has been playing around with Photoshop filters. But as you get more into it, if the neural network is asked with finding a more complex feature such as animals, it ends up generating a much more disturbing hallucination It's bizarre. It really is. You see images within the pictures that are making up what the picture actually is. You know, have you ever seen a collage of a picture? It's almost like a puzzle where there's a whole bunch of little pictures that make up a big picture. You know, a bunch of little pictures of different shades and colors and things that make up a bigger picture. It kind of resembles that in a way. It's real, almost abstract painting-like. It's really, really neat. I want you guys to go ahead and go take a look at it. It's leading into artificial intelligence, and it makes me wonder that if eventually this machine, if it can dream, will it eventually be able to think on its own? Will it learn from what it's doing already at the state it's in, or will it have to be programmed by people to be able to, you know, to go further as far as to, like, think for itself? Anyway, I want you guys to go and take a look at them. Some of these pictures are really trippy, like what you would think of if someone who was, you know, tripping on acid or mushrooms or something might draw if you gave them an ink pen or a set of crayons or something along those lines. It's really interesting. I want you guys to go take a look at it. The next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of Etsy.com. It's actually something that I found on Instagram, which I love Instagram. You can find me on there at the 13 Skulls. It's a simple, easy way to get your thoughts and pictures out there. It's pretty neat. But anyway, I found this. It's called Moody Voodies. Etsy.com/shop/Moody Voodies. MoodyVoodies. And they're these creepy little dolls that almost look like they're made out of burlap sack. Most dolls look like a doll. These look more like disturbing things that someone came up with in a dream. I mean, one of them is, they're all handmade. A lot of them are limited editions where you'll never see another one again. They make one of them and they're done. One of them is a little doll who's in chains. One of them is a goth girl. One of them, it looks like it's hanging with X's on its eyes. One of them has its heart ripped out. They all, not all of them, but some of them have like their eyes stitched shut and their mouth stitched shut. It's really, it's an interesting little thing. The dolls, you know, they range in price from, you know, $17.99 to $89.99. You know, you just have to go and take a look at them. If you like them, you know, go buy one. These dolls are really, really neat. So let's go ahead and move on to the next thing, which is courtesy of independent.co.uk. And it's something that can really relate to this show. Rogan sent this to me. And it's listening to extreme music, such as heavy metal, can help you calm down and feel inspired, according to a new study. The research, which was published in academic journal Frontiers in Human Neuroscience, says psychologists have found that rather than increasing anger and aggression, listening to loud and chaotic music actually helps listeners feel inspired and calm. Dr. Genevieve Dingle and Leah Sharman of the University of Queensland conducted the study of 39 people aged 18 to 34 who regularly listened to what was deemed extreme music. They were asked to discuss for 16 minutes an event in their life which angered them. They then spent 10 minutes either listening to a song of their choice or sitting in silence. The psychologist then monitored the emotional state of the participants. Ms. Sharman said, "We found the music regulated sadness and enhanced positive emotions. The music actually helped them explore the full gamut of emotion they felt, but also left them feeling more active and inspired. Results showed levels of hostility, irritability, and stress decreased after music was introduced, and the most significant change reported was the level of inspiration they felt." To me, that is amazing. I mean, if you're sad and you listen to sad music, it's going to make you sad. But at the same time, it will make you feel better because you don't feel alone. You can relate to it. Every time I was in a bad mood, every time I was not in a good mood, I would listen to something heavy. But then I would feel infinitely better after it. I like the music that's in this show. I've been told by many, many different people that they don't like the music in the show. And that probably is one of the things that turns a lot of people off is the music. And that's okay. I understand that. It's perfectly fine by me. It doesn't bother me because everybody has their own thing. It's not the music that I listen to constantly. I have a wide variety of taste when it comes to music. But the music that I put into this show, it fills a need for some people. There are shows out there that try to put heavy music into their shows, and I think it's terrible. But that's just me. I put this music in the show because I like it. I'm very picky when it comes to the music that I put into the show, you know, but at the same time, if somebody sends it to me and they say, "Hey, this is my band, I'll put it in the show just because I I can relate to those people. You have to get out there. You have to put yourself out there, and somebody needs to help you be exposed to it. So anyway, I'm rambling on here. I just think that it's true. Listening to heavy music, listening to something extreme, can make you feel better after you listen to it, because it gets your brain to release all that hostility and anger that you have built up, and then you feel better. And I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. So next time you hear a really heavy song, listen to it, feel it, and then think about how you felt after that. And you know, don't judge music just because you listen to 10 seconds of it or because you don't think you like it. There's a lot of music out there that most people wouldn't think that I like that I do. Take a listen to it. You might actually like it. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of humansarefree.com. Actually, the next two articles are courtesy of humansarefree.com. It's an interesting website for a lot of strange, weird things. I get a lot of notifications in Twitter about different articles and different things, and in Facebook too. I get a lot of articles and things that are directed in the same vein of the things that I like. And Humans Are Free is one of them. It's an interesting website, to say the least. They come up with a lot of neat things. Apparently, there's been a drill bit that has been found in coal that suggests an advanced civilization long before what was previously thought. Oopart, O-O-P-A-R-T, out-of-place artifact, is a term applied to dozens of prehistoric objects found in various places around the world that seem to show a level of technological advancement incongruous with the times in which they were made. Ooparts often frustrate conventional scientists, delight adventurous investigators open to alternative theories, and then it sparks debate. According to the conventional view of history, humans have only walked the earth in our present form for some 200,000 years, with our ancestors' history extending back perhaps somewhere around 6 million years. The earth's coal is said to have formed some hundreds of millions of years ago. That's why the appearance of a man-made iron instrument resembling a drill bit in the heart of a large trunk of coal has puzzled the historians who found it in the 19th century. It appeared that a man-made tool as advanced as the tools used in the 19th century was deposited in the organic matter that formed the coal before it became coal. Was a civilization advanced enough to use drill bits present hundreds of millions of years ago as this coal was forming? John Buchanan presented the mysterious object to a meeting of the Society of Antiquaries of Scotland on December 13, 1852. His accompanying statements are recorded in the Society's proceedings, which are quoted in the full end of this article, which you can go and read. There's a lot to this article here. I'm not going to go all the way through it. This John Buchanan related the story of a discovery of the iron instrument embedded in a seam of coal in the neighborhood of Glasgow. The instrument was exhibited to the meeting and was considered to be modern. It was suggested that in all probability, the iron instrument might have been part of a borer broken during the search for the coal. It wouldn't surprise me. Like I said, there's a lot more to this article here. I want you to go take a look at it. You can actually read through and, you know, see what they're talking about. There's no pictures of it there, which is what's making me curious more about it. I still don't see an image of the drill bit, so... Anyway, if anybody knows anything else about this, let me know. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article. I swear, Humans Are Free, it's a great website. For some reason, I'm having problems with the Shockwave Flash. It's crashing every single time I go and try to look at this article. So let's go ahead and let's move on to the next article, which is courtesy... My goodness, it is happening to all of them. Okay, I'm having some issues here, apparently. So let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break and see if I can get this all sorted out. And we'll be back in... just a few minutes. As we drift into the unknown, we vow that not shall stand alone. As we drift into the unknown, we vow that not shall stand alone. I see humanity's disease. I doubt there's anything left.
You won't find God's law in the devil's word.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. I think I might have some of this sorted out. I'm not sure. Hopefully, it won't become a problem too much. Anyway, the next article, again, is courtesy of humansarefree.com. Ukrainian researchers have come across one of the most important discoveries in recent years as they accidentally discovered a set of megalithic constructions and pyramids in the peninsula of Crimea. Well known in ancient history for archaeological and historical treasures from different cultures and ancient civilizations ranging from the Greeks and Romans to the Genoese and the Ottoman Turks, Crimea is an autonomous republic in Ukraine. It is located in the north coast of the Black Sea. The series of formations was discovered for the first time in 1999 by Vitalij Gok, who worked for the Soviet military for over 30 years. After his long career in the Soviet military, Gok decided to become a researcher, which led him to the discovery of the pyramids. He claimed that just like there were submerged towns in the region, there were buried pyramids and megalithic structures in the Crimean Peninsula. Gok was a former engineer, thus he had very good knowledge with magnetic resonance instruments. He even built a device to search for subterranean deposits of water since the area of Sevastopol had very poor water supplies. According to his website, the devices that he invented enabled the detection of elements in the Mendeleev periodic table. Oil and gas deposits, mechanisms and devices of various kinds, material objects both in the earth and in the areas of remote space. Thanks to these instruments, Gok was able to discover several limestone blocks which had regular dimensions, 2.5 by 1.5 meters, and his team assumed these were of artificial origin. Interestingly, the instrument invented by Gok also revealed that from the top of one of the structures, three beams of energy emanated. At frequencies of 900 by 109 hertz, 700 by 109 hertz, and 500 by 109 hertz. After the pyramid, a field of 10 by 109 hertz was found. Gok and his team state that the surrounding layers of one of the structures reveals that the underground pyramid was originally above the surface in open air, but due to flooding, the whole sea sank together with the structures. According to ICTV and the Crimean News Agency, a pyramid, a great pyramid of 45 meters in height and length of 72 meters, was found, and it was built sometime around the time of the dinosaurs. The quote-unquote Crimean pyramid has a truncated top like a Mayan pyramid, but its appearance is more like an Egyptian. It's hollow inside and a mummy of unknown creature is buried under the foundation. So far, the information regarding the veracity and existence of the pyramids has not been proven nor accepted by archaeologists. So far, around 7 pyramids have been registered forming a straight line which traveled from Sirich to Baia Karmashovia, and which runs northwest to southeast. One of these pyramids is located underwater in the vicinity of the city of Foros. In total, Gok believes that there are around 39 pyramidal structures and monolithic buildings in the entire Crimean Peninsula. I haven't seen any more pictures. I want to see more pictures. I think this is very interesting. I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think. All right, well, apparently some of these articles I'm just not going to be able to get to because they keep crashing on me. I'm not really sure why. So anyway, I'll post up links to them in the show notes. This is really starting to get on my nerves. It really, really is. So the next article is courtesy of FoxNews.com. Taking a vacation with a cruise ship full of zombies sounds like a premise of a blockbuster Hollywood film. But it will be a reality now for those who get aboard the Norwegian Pearl in January of 2016. In a partnership with Norwegian Cruise Line, Festivals at Sea marketer Sixth Man and Walker Stalker Khan, the normal cruise ship will be transformed into a playground for the fans of the hit television series and comic books The Walking Dead. According to Sixth Man, zombie-themed cruise will sail from Miami to Nassau, Bahamas for 3 days of horror-filled fun. Scheduled for January 15th through the 18th, 2016, aboard the Norwegian Pearl, passengers will interact with the actors from The Walking Dead, attend Q&A panels, have photo opportunities and autograph sessions, zombie gang costume test, theme nights, and more to be announced. Some of the celebrities already signed to appear include Norman Reedus, Chandler Riggs, Emily Kinney, Sonequa Martin-Green, Chad L. Coleman, Christian Siratos, Lawrence Gilliard Jr., and Ross Marquand. But there could be more added as the cruise gets closer. They have a video there if you wanted to go take a look at what Sixth Man has released, an official YouTube video celebrating the journey. It's going to be a neat thing. I wish I could attend it. It really is going to be a neat show. I wish I could be there for it, but Anybody, if you do decide to go to it, let me know how it goes. I would love to see some pictures. There's an official website there. It's walkerstalkercruise.com. It's an interesting website. You can go and sign up for it there if you decide that you wanted to go. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of humansarefree.com. According to this, the Smithsonian admits to the destruction of thousands of giant human skeletons in the early 1900s. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling has forced the Smithsonian Institution to release classified papers dating from the early 1900s that proves the organization was involved in a major historical cover-up of evidence showing giant humans' remains in the tens of thousands have been uncovered all across America and were ordered to be destroyed by high-level administrators to protect the mainstream chronology of human evolution at the time. The allegations, stemming from the American Institution of Alternative Archaeology, AIAA, that the Smithsonian Institution had destroyed thousands of giant human remains during the early 1900s, was not taken lightly by the Smithsonian, who responded by suing the organization for defamation and trying to damage the reputation of the 168-year-old institution. During the court case, new elements were brought to light as several Smithsonian whistleblowers admitted to the evidence of documents that allegedly proved the destruction of these tens of thousands of human giant skeletons, which reached between 6 and 12 feet in height. Now, I'm a little over 6 foot myself, so to see someone who would be twice as high, twice as tall as I am, it would be amazing to see. That doesn't go out of the realm of possibility. Given climate change and the way things could have been a long time ago, it could have, you know, it could have easily happened. You never know. There's a picture here of what is supposed to be a human femur that is almost as long as this man who's holding it is tall. Supposedly, it was discovered in Ohio in 2011 by the American Association for Alternative Archaeology, and it was similar to the evidence that was presented in court saying that this was the kind of stuff that the Smithsonian destroyed. A turning point of the court case was when a 1.3-meter-long human femur was shown as evidence in the court for the existence of human giant skeletons, of giant humans existing. There's a lot of supporting documents here that show it, that show some of these documents from newspaper clippings and everything about strange skeletons and giant bones that were found in mounds, people that were 9 feet tall, and it doesn't go out of the realm of possibility. There are certain people in this world who are 7, 8 feet tall. So to add on a couple more feet to it, it's not really out of the realm of possibility. So let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of IN5D.com, and it's a cube UFO that was spotted by multiple witnesses, and there are photos to it. And I believe the website is actually N5D.com. Not IN5D, like I said it in a minute ago. I think it's like N5D, like five dimensions. This cube UFO, it was supposedly on June 29th of 2015 of this year. There's a video there of it. You can see it almost comes through the cloud in like this portal. It's a bit of a weird video. It's a bit of a weird situation all the way around because I've never seen a cube UFO before. The first person to submit photographs for this was Walter C. Lance of El Paso, Texas. Of course, it's going to happen in Texas. Everything's bigger and better in Texas, although it's not, even though I love Texas. It's a great place, but it's, it is what it is. It's a great place, but sometimes it's not, just like anywhere else. But anyway, the area within this vortex that came out of the clouds was jet black. And then that's whenever this guy took out his phone and recorded these pictures, these images of this thing that came out. It's a bizarre picture. It's a bizarre thing. It almost looks like a monolith. Could have easily been photoshopped. You never know. It's just weird. I mean, you know, you don't have to have any type of aerodynamics to fly through space, but what purpose would it serve for it to be a cube? Unless the Decepticons are coming to get their cube back. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. Why don't you go take a look at it? Let me know what you think. The next article that I want to take a look at is really, it's something, again, in the realm of science that I've always found fascinating. Experts discover dark material that is being constantly replenished, and they're saying that something might be going on that's fairly prolific in the comet Philae. They're saying that there's a possibility that there is evidence of alien life and that it's unequivocal on the comet carrying the Philae probe through space. The experts say that it's the most likely explanation for these certain features on 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko comet, such as its organic rich black crust. It's supposedly the presence of living organisms beneath an icy surface. Rosetta, the European spacecraft orbiting the comet, is also said to have picked up a strange cluster of organic material that resemble viral particles, but neither Rosetta nor its lander probe, Philae, are equipped to search for such direct evidence of life. Astronomers and astrobiologist Professor Chandra Wickramasinghe, who was involved in planning the mission for 15 years, said that, "I wanted to include a very inexpensive life detection experiment at the time, but it was thought that it was a bizarre proposition." He and colleague Dr. Max Wallace from the University of Cardiff believe 67P and other comets like it could provide homes for living microbes similar to the extremophiles that inhabit the most inhospitable regions of Earth, like the heat vents at the bottom of the ocean where there's life there, but there's no life anywhere else. They say the comets may have helped sow the seeds of life on Earth, and that possibly other planets such as Mars were seeded with life early on in its existence. There's more to this article here, but I just thought it was neat. First, that we landed a probe on a comet. That's just a fascinating thing to know that you're going, 73,000 miles an hour, that it's 167 million miles from Earth, and that they're able to talk to it and get this information. It's fascinating no matter what. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is the last article before we're going to take a break. It's courtesy of psfk.com. Incline Gallery in San Francisco will host an art exhibit with works that give the living impaired a way to participate in the connected living world. Afterlife, curated by Valerie Levy, will feature works by artists Fernando Oriana and Al Honig, and be hosted at the former mortuary turned into art gallery. Oriana created machines that sense paranormal presence and communicate it through personal objects, and Honig made anthropomorphic urns that give the dead a window to observe the world of the living. These are some really neat things. Basically, it's just paranormal stuff to give the dead a way to speak and communicate with the living, but it's an art exhibit. Odd, to say the least, and who knows if they're actually going to work, but they're very neat, almost kind of a paranormal steampunk in a way. If you go and take a look at it, I like steampunk stuff. I think it's really neat that people turn things into the things they turn into with the steampunk stuff. And this is kind of adding a paranormal spin to it. When we come back, we're going to be taking a look at the people of an isolated island that are killing anyone and everyone that comes aboard their island, that comes onto it. They are killing everyone. And the head, the skull of the director of Nosferatu has been stolen from the grave. There's a lot more coming up, so you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is Lex, the host of the Anything Goes show, and you and I are listening to the 13 Skulls podcast. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. I'm James.
And I'm Tim, and we are the hosts of Tastes Like Burning, which, interestingly enough, has nothing at all to do with cooking.
Yeah, we're not a cooking podcast, but what we do talk about is spicy and delicious.
That's right, James. No topic is off limits, and I, for one, try not to think before I speak.
Find us on iTunes or go to the show's website, tasteslikeburning.libsyn.com, to subscribe.
And might I just add, you are looking and or smelling amazing today, listener.
Welcome to the audio novella Title Fight. And in this corner, the authors with a combined weight of 446 fighting pounds. Mad Dog, Matt Wallace, and Scott, the future Dark Overlord Sigler, the tag team champions of the world. This audio novella contains harsh language, adult situations, and a rather disturbing amount of violence. Let's get ready to rumble!
Title Fight is a 10-part novella written by Parsec award-winning author Matt Wallace and New York Times best-selling novelist Scott Sigler. Set in Sigler's The Rookie Universe, Title Fight is mixed martial arts cage fighting in the far future, where a lethal human contender challenges an undefeated alien champion. The bell will ring, the blood will fly, but only one can leave with the galactic heavyweight belt. Patiobooks.com/Title Fight.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of bizlifes.net. And it's a strange box that was found in a dumpster, and what was inside is just baffling everybody. It looks handmade with hinges, handles, and two locks. But when they opened it up, they found a bunch of really weird stuff. The author had some otherworld experience that is talked about in a handwritten letter and a handwritten table of elements. I mean, he's talking about seeing a UFO and that there's patents. There's a diagram from 1939 of some kind of a railroad car, some kind of a railroad bearing. And then there's maps from way back then of like air travel around the world, hand-drawn maps. Maps that show the world split into different sections on a circle. A note from the previous owner that says some really weird things if you can read it. Portable TV set and stuff like that from like 1930s. Coming up with ideas about what they think the future is going to hold. There's strange things inside this. I mean, there's a Veterans Affair card in there. There's a description of some kind of an extraterrestrial event that took place in Tampa, Florida in 1977. Weird angelic-like creatures in a picture with a UFO with like scribbly drawing and handwriting that you really can't even read what it is. A drawing of an angelic-like being with a human's head and then three like bird heads behind it. Talking about experimental geometric designs and weird things. I mean, stuff that makes you think that this person had some kind of a crazy imagination or they had some kind of a weird experience in their life that made them come up with this stuff. I want you to go take a look at it. Some of these drawings are very intricate and very well done, and some are not. How they're from the same person is beyond me, but I want you to go take a look at the strange things that they found in this box. It's really interesting. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of messagetoeagle.com. There are places on this planet that even today remain greatly unexplored and shrouded in a veil of mystery. Hidden in the mountains, now long forgotten and ignored, we find amazing ancient cave churches, undeciphered ancient writings, depictions of alien beings, and subterranean tunnels that all refuse to give up their secrets. Mystery ruins, stories of an unknown ancient race, and the presence of supernatural forces in the area are all aspects that woven together constitute an ancient mystery story few people can resist. Today, this region is known as the Athos of Romania, or Giant's Land. They're in the Buzău Mountains in Romania. And they're very beautiful. I mean, the pictures that they're showing here of these caves are really quite amazing. They can be found in the territory called Luana's Land, or Terra Luanae, situated near Alunus, Nuku, and Colti villages. Caves, cells, and churches carved into the stone during the first centuries of Christianity were used as places of refuge and worship. The caves that they're showing, they're really quite well done, really simplistic. But to know that they carved them out of rock that long ago, I mean, to me personally, to carve anything out of stone is amazing. It really is, because stone, I mean, it's hard to dig through. And to dig something as big as a cave into a solid block of rock is amazing. And according to some sources, probably 300 years after the death of Christ, the first Christian missionaries on Romanian territory arriving from the Middle East lived in these caves. Up to the 19th century, hermits and monks used these caves as places to live and to pray. It's quite amazing. Some of these pictures look rather rudimentary. They're rather simple and easy. You know, they're not hard to do, but some of the caves themselves look very impossible to do. I mean, for me personally, I think it's impossible. It's not impossible in and of itself, but I couldn't do it. So I just thought it was really neat. I want you guys to go and take a look at them and let me know what you think. There's something that I wanted to take a look at. It's neat. It's courtesy of Wired.com, and it's a paradoxical crystal that is baffling scientists. Interactions between electrons inside samarium hexaboride appear to be giving a rise to an exotic quantum behavior that's new to researchers. In a deceptively drab black crystal, physicists have stumbled upon a baffling behavior, one that appears to blur the line between the properties of metals, in which electrons flow freely, and those of insulators, in which electrons are effectively stuck in place. The crystal exhibits hallmarks of both of them simultaneously. This is a big shock, said Sukhitra Sebastian, a condensed matter physicist at the University of Cambridge whose findings appeared this month in the advanced online edition of the journal Science. Insulators and metals are essentially opposites, she said, but somehow it's a material that's both. It's contrary to everything we know. The material, a much-studied compound called samarium hexaboride, or SMB6, is an insulator at very low temperatures, meaning it resists the flow of electricity. Its resistance implies that electrons cannot move through the crystal more than an atom's width in any direction. And yet, Sebastian and her collaborators observed electrons transversing orbits millions of atoms in diameter inside the crystal in response to a magnetic field, a mobility that is only expected in materials that conduct electricity. So it conducts electricity, but it doesn't conduct electricity, depending on, I believe, the temperature of it. There's a lot more here to this article that I want you to go take a look at. I thought it was really neat that something can have its cake and eat it too. It's really fascinating. I want you to go take a look at it. All right, the next article is courtesy of emgn.com, and it's the 12 most mysterious things that have been found on Earth that cannot be explained. MOAs are giant ostriches that existed only in New Zealand and supposedly became extinct 500 years ago. So researchers were pretty shocked when they found this MOA claw in a cave on Mount Owen in the 1980s, and it's so well preserved that it seems like it didn't die very long ago. Number 2, the Longyu Grottoes. These man-made caves exist underground in China, but their origin remains a bit of a mystery. They're now thought to have been created during the Qin Dynasty, but no record of the caves have ever been found. Number 3, the Gate of the Sun. Like Stonehenge, Bolivia's Gate of the Sun exists as a bit of a mystery. It's located at 13,000 feet above sea level, and the carvings seem to have some sort of archaeological and astrological importance. It's neat. It looks like an archway, like a doorway. Like it's two big, square, slightly rectangular blocks with a block going across it that has a lot of intricate carvings in it. It's a neat thing. Number 4, L'Anse aux Meadows. I think I completely butchered that, but under these grassy meadows in Newfoundland, Canada, the remains of an ancient Viking civilization were discovered. This proves that the Vikings made their way to North America 500 years before Christopher Columbus even thought about it. Number 5, Göbekli Tepe. This site found on top of a mountain in Turkey furthered our understanding of ancient civilizations. The church was actually built before the rest of the town, showing the dedication these people had to religion. Number 6, the Voynich Manuscript. No one knows what this manuscript says or even what language it's written in. Some believe it's an extinct Mexican dialect. Some think it's a coded Asian language. Either way, the manuscript remains a mystery for now. And I actually saw a bit of a documentary or TV show or whatever you want to call it on the Voynich manuscript, and it's a fascinating thing. It really is, even though I think it's been brought about to be a hoax, but I'm not really sure. Number 7, Yonaguni Monument. It still isn't known whether this natural huge structure is either man-made or naturally occurring, but either way, it's bizarre. It features 90-degree angles and flat surfaces and sits on the coast of Yonaguni in Japan. It is a bizarre thing because there's a lot of, it almost looks like steps and corner. I mean, if it's naturally occurring, it's one of the most geometrically angled sites that I've ever seen. Number 8, Stone Age Tunnels. This huge network of tunnels dates back to the Stone Age, and no one can figure out how they were able to construct them at the time. Costa Rica's Stone Spheres. Hundreds of these perfectly round spheres exist in all sizes across Costa Rica. Archaeologists truly have no idea what they were created for. And I saw another show on these where people took a boulder or a rock and tried to make it into a perfect sphere. And they couldn't quite get it perfect. These spheres are, from what I understand, completely spherical. They are perfectly round. And for the size of some of it, it would almost be impossible to really do something like this without putting a lot of resources into it. And really, the question, I guess, really is, what were they made for? Was it simply just for fun, or did they do it for a reason? Is there a religious reason for them? I don't know, but they're still interesting. Number 10 is an unfinished obelisk. I think obelisks are really interesting and pretty to know that you can build something this size out of one piece of rock and raise it up out of the ground. The resources in the time that they were made that it would take to raise one of these things up is just amazing. This unfinished obelisk lies half cut out of the bedrock in Egypt. When cracks started to appear in the granite, building was abandoned, and you can see a bunch of people standing on it, so you can get a size relation as to how big this thing really is. Number 11, Mohenjo-Daro. This site, located in Pakistan, is one of the earliest major urban settlements. It has signs of city planning, social organization, and a drainage system. It's believed that over 40,000 people have lived there. To know that they had a drainage system. Of all things, you know, we can plan out how things are set up. And, you know, you can have social organization because that's what you have to have society. But to have a drainage system speaks of wanting to be clean, of wanting to get rid of the things that you want to get rid of to drain things away from where you're at, such as a waste management system or, you know, something along those lines to keep water away from being able to, you know, to pool up or anything to cause diseases. Number 12 is Sacsayhuaman. We just talked about that in the last episode. This pile of stacked stones sit outside Cusco in Peru, the ancient capital of the Incan Empire. The rocks are so carefully cut and measured that they fit together perfectly without mortar. How this was achieved still remains up for debate. All right, the next website that I wanted to point you guys in the direction of is lexus-int.com. I don't know if it's real or if it's a joke website, but it's by Lexus, and it's the Slide. Through the combination of design, technology, and imagination, Slide is a perfect example of the amazing things that can be achieved. And it's a hoverboard. And it's actually quite an attractive hoverboard. It's really sleek. It's got a wooden top. It looks pretty thick. I mean, you would need something there of some size to be able to get you off the ground if it actually is what it is. I'm thinking it might be not exactly 100% true, but I would love it. It'd be great. The technology, supposedly, the Lexus hoverboard uses magnetic levitation to achieve amazing frictionless movement. Liquid nitrogen-cooled superconductors and permanent magnets combine to allow the Lexus hoverboard to create the impossible, which is hover. Wrapped in a design that is uniquely Lexus, the hoverboard features the iconic Lexus spindle grille signature shape using materials found in the car brand, such as like natural bamboo, which I think bamboo is natural anyway because it grows out of the ground. But I want you to go take a look at this thing. It's a really attractive hoverboard. And if it is, you should watch the teaser video. It's neat to see it actually in motion. Like I said, I don't know if it's true or not. You know, everybody who's seen Back to the Future, who's seen the hoverboards they have there, have wanted one. I know I've wanted one, so we'll see. One day you might actually have hoverboards instead of skateboards. The next article is courtesy of Wesh.com. The head of the legendary silent film director F.W. Murnau has been stolen from his grave, according to reports. The Huffington Post reported that police believe the thief could be related to an occult ritual. Murnau is perhaps most known for Nosferatu, an unauthorized adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula. Critics have long praised the film for its frightening imagery and pioneering influence on the horror movie genre. Murnau's grave is located about 12 miles outside of Berlin, Germany. It's been disturbed a number of times before, and officials are considering sealing the chamber. The famed director died in 1931 in a car crash in California. People do weird things all the time. Why you would steal someone's head is beyond me, but, you know, when it comes down to it, can you really think of a better person? If you've never seen Nosferatu, you need to go see it. It's creepy. Watch it in the dark, by yourself, or in complete silence if you're with somebody else, and do it right before you go to bed. It's fantastic. So the next thing that I wanted to point you guys in the direction of is vault.fbi.gov. I think we've already covered some of this stuff before on this website. What's funny about it is whenever you go to it, a disclaimer pops up that says the Freedom of Information Library contains many files of public interest and historical value. In compliance with the National Archives and Records Administration, or NARA, some of the records are no longer in their physical possession of the FBI, eliminating the FBI's capability to re-review and or reprocess this material. So basically what you have is what you get. The image quality contained within the site is subject to the condition of the original documents and the original scanning efforts. So basically what they're saying is that some of the documents we don't have anymore, and so what you see is what you get. As far as the quality goes, it's not going to be very good, so it's going to be hard to really determine what they're talking about. And some of them you'll see in the pictures. There are 69 pictures here for you to go and take a look at. It's in PDF form, and it will show you some of the stuff relating to UFOs and aliens in their home world, their home planet, in these articles. The quality is such that it's almost impossible to read just about anything. I thought it was neat. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. If you want to read through them all and try to get the information out of it, let me know and send me that. I would love to know what you get from this. All right, everybody, we're going to take a bit of a break here, but when we come back, we have three more articles to look through. One of them is about an island of people who will kill anyone who comes to it. The next is about superhumans and how they could be worth billions in today's market. And one of the strangest websites I have ever come across. You guys stay put. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We will all go down together. This is more than a friendship. Since I'm fucking memory. We clap the blindness and take it over. The skies are screaming for us to take doors. We'll find the stars and we will find the wings. For I refuse to receive our screen. My hands are bleeding from all the lies. It has been pouring of something in me. Shouldn't I run up to do this alone? It would call me a shit for a soul. But I have faith in the few that surround me. And I would not trust my life to anyone else. As a shark leads the way around, I am not afraid. And I can see through the water into the depths of the sea. The graveyard of Brussels, what the ships that can be for me. And I can hear these voices calling now. Why did you not drown like us? Why did you not drown like us? The lock and down to make the cup. What is it that makes you strong? What is it that makes you strong? Why scream to the sea and answer? My family is everything. My family is everything. When there is nothing else left, when there is nowhere to turn, I know that I can't count up. But one day you'll go fix it on me. And this is missing me. All right, everybody, the next article is courtesy of themindunleashed.org. North Sentinel Island, located in the Bay of Bengal between Myanmar and Indonesia, is home to an isolated tribe that has never been colonized or ever made contact with. These people are one of the last Stone Age tribes on Earth whose culture has been completely untouched by modern civilization. And it's actually quite a big island. It's just in between Burma and India. Despite the fact that the island formerly belongs to India, no one dares to visit it and approach the Sentinelese tribe. The reason is their extreme violence and hostility. Anyone who has ever tried to come ashore the island was attacked and killed. In 1896, a Hindu convict escaped from the prison but had a bad luck to go aground on the island. As a result, his body was found a few days later on a beach, perforated by arrows and with his throat cut. In August of 1981, when the ship Primrose ran aground on North Sentinel Island, the crew noticed men on the beach who were carrying arrows and spears. The captain tried to use radio communication to ask for help, but did not receive it. Fortunately, the crew was lucky enough to be kept away from the island by troubled waters and rescued by helicopters a few days later. There's a lot of pictures here of, I guess, helicopters going over, of satellite imagery, of people on boats that are just outside of their reach of their arrows. A lot of pictures and more stories of people who have been killed there. The tribe is estimated between 50 and 400 members. I mean, you would have to be. The size of this island, it's actually a big island. But to have a sustainable population, you would need quite a few people. I wonder what drives them to want to kill anyone and everyone who comes ashore. You would have to be on constant patrol around the entire island looking for people who are coming to the island. It's interesting, say the least. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of Bloomberg.com. Superhumans. There's a couple of them, and according to some, they could be worth billions. Stephen Peake can put his hand on a hot stove or step on a piece of glass and not feel a thing, all because of a quirk in his genes. Only a few dozen people in the world share his congenital insensitivity to pain. Drug companies see riches in his rare mutation. They also have their eyes on people like Timothy Dreyer, who's 25. His bones are so dense he could walk away from an accident that would leave others with broken bones. About 100 people have this, and it's called sclerosteosis. Both men's apparent, quote-unquote, superpowers come from exceedingly uncommon deviations in their DNA. They are genetic outliers, coveted by drug companies Amgen, Genentech, and others in search of drugs for some of the industry's biggest and most lucrative markets. These genes have also caused two men enormous suffering. Pete's parents first realized something was wrong with their baby as he was teething. He almost chewed off his own tongue. That was a giant red flag. Pete is now 34. I mean, if you don't feel pain as a baby, I mean, chew off your tongue, chew off your fingers, you know, you chew off your lips. That could be quite a bad thing. Anyway, it's estimated that just for this, the painkiller market right now is worth about $18 billion. So if they could find out a way to bottle, to, for lack of a better way to put it, his ability to not feel pain, so many people out there have chronic pain that you could pass this on to, that would pay infinite amounts of money for this. People will pay whatever it is you charge if they know that it will take away your pain. Anyway, I just thought it was a really neat article. Let's go ahead and move on to the last and most confusing website that I have come across in a long time. It's 973-EHT-NAMUH-973.com. I have yet to figure this thing out. I have absolutely no idea even really how to explain it. The homepage says A, maze, N, abracadabra, 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 all in the shape of a triangle. Once you click on the A, it takes you to another page with three colored moving spheres that all have designs that are different from each other. They're all turning to the left, and they all take you to a page that has a bunch of numbers, a bunch of sayings. I that am, that nine, that am, that I. Blessed be that name be blessed. Things like that. Like it says the alphabet with the numbers correlating to them. It's one of the weirdest websites I have ever seen. And I want you to go take a look at it. So far, I've found nothing weird in the way of, you know, it being a virus or anything. I just don't know if it's something along the lines of some kind of a code? Is it somebody's just weird imagination? Is it a dream that somebody had? I don't know. There's a saying at the bottom that said, added to all minus none, shared by everything, multiplied in abundance. Arises that sun sets, that sun sets, that sun arises, that sun. Divine is love 99. 99 is love divine. Things like that, it's bizarre. I want you guys to go and take a look at this website because it is so weird. There's another page that has A plus Z, 9 times 7, 63, 6 plus 3 equals 9, 9 X Z 72, 7 plus 2, 9, OM 793. The next page is this really weird picture. I can't even really describe it besides it's some kind of an abstract Buddha-like weird alien humid creature with claws of some sort wearing sandals. I really wish I could explain it better, but I can't. There's other weird pictures here that look like some kind of a strange drawing that someone had in mind. The next page says, after the imitation, Elised thank the white rabbits most humbly for the blessed gift of the sacred symbols. Anybody have any idea what that means? I want you to go take a look at this website. It's bizarre. It just keeps going. You know, there are other weird pages, weird pictures, you know, strange, bizarre things that I cannot explain. There's biblical passages. There's all kinds of strange, weird, bizarre things that I am just completely baffled by. I want you guys to go and take a look at this site. If you go take a look at any site that I post a link up to, make it this one. It is unbelievably bizarre. It kind of boggles my mind that A, someone would come up with this, and B, that they would put it on a website. And you come up to another page that has this weird yin-yang spinning thing with numbers in the alphabet, the magical alphabet, the grand gallery. It is by far the most bizarre website I've ever seen. And there's a strange art gallery. Wild. I might have to take one of these pictures and save it, which I am doing right now, and use it as the... I'm saving this right now as I'm recording this, because it is so bizarre. I'm having a hard time really containing myself, because I love weird things. I love everything there is about strange stuff. Obviously, I do this show. This whole website has confused me beyond anything. So I'm wondering just what it is, because it's half gibberish and half weird clown, alien, strange creatures underneath a tree, weird negative image pictures. I'm and there's a lot of them too. That's one thing I can't really understand. There's a lot of them. Somebody has taken the time to draw these things, put them in, you know, scan them, put them on the computer and make a website out of it. And there's so many of them, but they're all really bizarre. And they're all almost reproductions of the same pictures over and over and over, but they're all different from each other with the same basic design in there. I don't understand it. Again, I want you guys to go and take a look at it. So we're going to take one last little break here, and when we get back, we'll close out the show. Everybody, I really appreciate you coming out and listening to the show. Since it is the end, let's go ahead and bury the formalities, get them in the dirt and out of the way. If you want to contact me, you can email me the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com, or you can call me and tell me your feedback, comments, whatever. It's 817-986-0019. You can find me at the13skulls.com, www.the13skulls.com. I'm at the13skulls on Instagram, facebook.com/the13skulls. I'm at the13skulls on G+ and on Twitter. I'm pretty much everywhere. I'm always wanting to promote independent bands, podcasts, and personal endeavors of any kind. So if you or someone you know has something like that, anything at all, please contact me and have them contact me, and let's get their music promos or an ad for their show or whatever project they're working on or whatever sent to me so I can get you some exposure. You know, the show's starting to pick up some speed. There's more people listening every week. There's more happening with it. So if you want, I would love to give you some exposure if you or somebody you know has something they would want to put into the show, be it music or an ad for your show or whatever. It doesn't really matter. You know, you have an art project or something you want some exposure for, your website, whatever, let me know. If you have an experience or feedback, I would love to hear it, so email me or call me. Give me a review in iTunes. Thanks to everybody who ever has. Sadly, they got reset. There's only one there now. If you like the show, you know, whatever you think about it, go give me a review in iTunes if you listen on an iPhone or whatever, if you listen through iTunes. You can also listen through Stitcher. I'm at the 13 Skulls there, too. or stitcher.com/the13skulls. I put a link on the right sidebar of the13skulls.com, so you can go in and just click on that. Some of the music is from Mevio's Music Alley, could be from Free Music Archive. It could just be something that I'm having to go back and reuse from a previous show. I'm not really sure. It just depends on it from week to week if I can find anything good to put into the show. The sound effects that have been, are being, and always will be used in this show are courtesy of the Free Sound Project at freesound.org. I'll post up links to everything you heard about in the show notes. Again, if you have a podcast, radio show, or book, or any website or anything, and you want to promote it in the show, just send me an email and we'll get that worked out. Everyone, I really hope that you are having a great day, night, week, weekend, or whatever it is that you're listening to this. And I will talk to you again on another day.
My surrender, close my mind to cope with your agenda. Who's got the power to make you go?